Welcome everybody to the class on Parshas Noach 5767. This year, the title of the class is Conversations with Hashem. And the choice of that title is based on an approach which I would like to take this year, and that is to search in every Parsha possible a conversation between Hashem and a person or people. We'll have to see if there are any exceptions to that. And as an attempt to better define for ourselves as Jews, what does it mean to converse with God and to listen to God in the attempt to establish and strengthen our relationship with Him? That's a big buzzword in our community, and thank God with the growth of the Teshuva movement, many people coming back to Judaism, and the notion of having a relationship with God is something very meaningful, which even transcends the simple notion of you just got to do the mitzvahs, because that's what it says. This is something which I think will enhance that process. So last week we studied conversations between Hashem and Adam, and Hashem and Chava. And this week in Parshas Noach we will try to listen in on conversations between Hashem and Noach. So I'm looking for any conversation. I find that any conversations that there are in Noach are just one-sided. Hashem speaks to Noach. Nowhere does Noach answer back. All right, so we'll have to be satisfied with a one-sided conversation. But Hashem is coming to Noach and telling him some things. So I'm looking through the Parsha, how many times does Hashem speak to Noah? We all know the story of Noah and the ark and the flood. We know that the Torah says that by and large the world was corrupt. The sages and commentators tell us that they were guilty of transgressions between man and man, robbery, violence, transgressions between man and God, immoral behavior, immoral sexual life, idolatry, and we know that the society was not on a very high level. And we know that Hashem saw fit that the world should be destroyed. Perhaps the world had self-destructed, and the flood was just the carrying out of the natural consequence of things. And we know that Hashem told Noah and his family that they would be spared. So we know the basic story. He told Noah to take his family and to bring them into the ark. But this time, let's learn the story again, and let's this time listen in on the conversation. So I found that Hashem speaks to Noach 5 times. The first time that Hashem speaks to Noach is at the beginning, when he tells him of the intention that he has. Vayomer Elohim Lenoach. This is chapter 6, verse 13. Vayomer Elohim Lenoach. Ketz kol basar balefanai, ki malah haaretz chamas mipnehem, vihinini mashchisam es haaretz. God said to Noach, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with robbery through them, and behold, I am about to destroy them from the earth. Aseh locha tevas atzeh gofer, kinim taseh es hateva, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make an ark with compartments and cover it inside and out with pitch. So that's the first talk, the first address. Hashem says to Noach, the world is corrupt. It's got to be destroyed. I'm giving you an out. I'm giving you an escape. And that is this ark. And you should put into the ark animals as well, so that you can have a new start. That's the first time. The second time Hashem comes to Noach is, according to our sages, over 100 years later. We don't know if he spoke to him any other time, but it's not in the Chumash. Remember, the Chumash is not a storybook. It's not a history. The Chumash does not tell you everything that happens from the beginning until the end. The Chumash tells you everything that Hashem would like us to know about what happened. Because Hashem is trying to teach us. It's not intended to give us all of the facts of the history. If we want to know all the facts of the history, then we should study history. The Chumash is about wanting to hear what Hashem is trying to teach us. He uses the history when it's necessary, when it's desired. He uses commandments, and he uses all kinds of speech. But remember, the Chumash is a letter from God to us. So Hashem wants us to know that he spoke to him at the outset when he told him about the impending flood and about the escape. Hashem also wants us to know that he speaks to Noah again, and according to the calculations, this is over 100, I believe 120 years later, when he says to him the following, Vayomer Hashem l'Noach, Bo ata v'chol beischa el hateva, ki oscha ra'isi tzadik lefanai bador hazeh. Then Hashem said to Noach, come to the ark, you and all your household, for it is you that I have seen to be righteous before me in this generation. Now I know I told you that already before. I know I told you to make the ark, but now I'm telling you to go into the ark, because the flood is imminent. That's the second conversation. The third conversation that Hashem wants to teach us about occurs a year later, after the flood waters have subsided. And here, the conversation goes as follows. Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemor. God spoke to Noach, saying, Tzei min hateva, ata ve'ishtecha uvanecha uneshev onecha itach. Go forth from the ark, you and your wife, your sons, and your sons' wives with you, and bring the animals out with you. So the third conversation is, go out of the ark. Now here is something fascinating. You may be familiar with the two terms commonly used for and he spoke, or and he said. There's Vayomer and Vayedaber. Vayomer is translated as, and he said. Vayedaber is translated as, and he spoke. In English, there's not much significance to the difference between saying and speaking, I don't think, not that much. But in Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, there is a very significant difference. The sages tell us that Vayomer, saying, is a lashon rach, is a soft tone. Vayedaber is a lashon kasha. Vayedaber, speaking, is a hard tone, a harsher tone. Which means that when it says Vayomer Hashem, when Hashem said, he's saying something which is softer, which is easier to accept from the listener. When he says Vayedaber, he's saying something that is a little harder to accept. I think it's fascinating that to get Noah into the ark, he uses a softer tone. To get him out of the ark, he uses a harsher tone. Why would that be necessary? Why would it be necessary to twist Noah's arm to get out? I would think it would be just the opposite, that he would have to twist his arm to get in, because Noah doesn't want to see the flood come. On the other hand, he's getting saved. But why would he have to twist his arm to get out of the ark? Any ideas? He doesn't have to worry about anybody else being more aggressive, because there ain't nobody out there. So what is he afraid of? When he goes out there, he'll still be the only one there, him and his kids.
He's going to have to make his own way when he gets out. Things are somewhat handed to him on the ark.
Okay, we're going to incorporate the two comments that were mentioned here. Very good.
In your lead up to this third conversation, you talk about a conversation.
Yeah.
I didn't hear
Noah say anything. Yeah.
And well, that's why he's reluctant. He hasn't got an idea in his head. He'll do whatever Hashem tells him to do.
Okay, but then Hashem shouldn't have to use the harsher tone of voice any more than he did the first conversations. The first conversations was Vayomer, and he said softly. The third one is Vayedaber. He spoke harshly. Why the change?
Wouldn't there be a certain amount of fear? He has lived here for a year. He has security. He's seen the entire world wiped out. So wouldn't fear enter into it?
It may be so, but we need to identify what that fear is. There's no more water out there. The flood is gone. He's got no people to worry about. Doesn't have to worry about the corruption of society because it's a clean slate. You would think that he'd be bouncing out of there and trying to start a new life. But we'll identify that. We have to work on that a little bit.
Brenda,
yes.
Maybe he was afraid because nobody else existed but him and his family, and that meant Hashem would really be focusing on him.
Uh-huh. And until now, he hasn't?
Other people.
I know, I mean in the Ark for the last year. Why will it be harder for him off the Ark than in the Ark? He's still the only one.
With the Ark, I don't know that he thought of Hashem very
uh-huh.
much.
He got familiar and comfortable with it.
I think it's easier sometimes in environments like the Ark would be like a yeshiva student in yeshiva. You know, through the walls of yeshiva, it's easy to. You don't have any outside influence. Once you get out of the Ark, the yeshiva, you have the world to deal with.
I better stop Dr. Izuri right here, otherwise he's going to steal my thunder. No pun intended. Okay, you're on to something. Dr. Fisher?
Fear of unknown. How do you know what damage the floods cause?
Uh-huh.
Is it quicksand? You know, what's out there? You're safe in the Ark, because you know that, because you've been in there. What's it environmentally going to be like when you get out?
Hashem told him, so if he trusts Hashem... Okay, but you're right. There is the unknown. Who knows? It's a new world. Okay, very good. All right, let's continue. We have two more conversations that we found. Number four is beginning of chapter 9. Vayivarech Elokim es Noach v'es banav v'yomer lahem pru urvu milu es aretz. God blessed Noach and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the land. He goes on, the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens and everything that moves on earth and all the fish of the sea. In your hand they are given. I have given you everything. You may even eat the creatures. This is the beginning of meat eating. Of course, there are limitations. You may not eat blood. You may not take the limb of a live animal off and eat it. You must kill the animal first, you must get rid of the blood, etc. And of course, you may not shed blood. A man may not spill blood. That is something that I will not tolerate, God says. But in general, you should be fruitful and multiply. You should dominate. You should really take charge. Noah. That's number four. Number four is the charge to Noah after he leaves the ark is to dominate the earth. And number five... Vayomer Elokim, this is just a little bit further down, verse 9. Vayomer Elokim al Noach v'al banav ito lemor. God said to Noach and to his sons with him, saying, V'ani hinini mekim es brisi itchem v'yazarachem acharechem. As for me, behold, I will establish my covenant with you and with your offspring after you. I'm making a covenant, and my covenant will be confirmed with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And say the commentaries, never again will anything destroy the earth. I will never destroy all of mankind. There may be partial destruction. There may be a Holocaust. But there will never be total annihilation of society as there was now. So the fifth conversation has to do with a guarantee that the world will never reach the point of destruction and corruption that it had previously. So we have these five conversations, Hashem informing Noah that there's going to be a flood and that the world will be destroyed, but that he will be spared through the ark. There's the actual invitation to get on the ark. There is the instruction, the command to get off of the ark. There's the blessing and the charge of taking responsibility for the development of the world. And then there is the guarantee that it will never reach a state of total destruction. Now, not only are we studying conversations with Hashem, but we are studying them from the point of view of Musar, of character refinement and improvement. And that means, basically, that when we listen to a conversation between Hashem and Noach, we have to hear that there's really a conversation between Hashem and us. We have to take it to heart. We have to take it personally. You know how you hear people say, don't take it personally. Well, when you learn the Chumash, take it personally. So what is Hashem telling us? I believe that Hashem is telling us, and he's really telling this to anyone who, as Noach, would have the conscience to be righteous, perfect in his generation, which many sages say is a relative thing. Someone that has a sensitivity of, I want to do the right thing. I realize that the world around me has a lot of failings, a lot of shortcomings. There's a lot of schmutz out there. I know that I want something higher. I want to live a life with God. For anyone like that, Hashem comes and says, you're right. The world is a pretty rotten place out there. There's a lot of bad stuff. Everything that was going on then is going on now. Just turn on the radio. But there's an escape. If you wish to have a higher life, I have the answer for you. There's something called a teva. There's something called an ark. And the definition of an ark, it's not limited to gopher wood that is 300 cubits long. Now, there's probably a lot of Kabbalistic symbolisms of these dimensions. I have no doubt about it. I just don't know what they are. But an ark is not limited to something made out of wood, something that floats on water. An ark, in essence, is a space or a time or an experience where a person can be surrounded and protected by God's love, by God's direction, God's people. It's somewhere where a person can find a haven. You may not want to go there right away. I'm noticing that it took Noah 120 years. I wouldn't recommend anyone waiting that long, but it took Noah really a long time to go from knowing that it was there to actually making the commitment to go there. And I think that's also indicative. Hashem gives Noah plenty of time to think about it. And he gives him plenty of time to contemplate the choices, the options. You can have the world and go down the drain with it, or you can seek a higher ground. So an ark can be, let's imagine, let's use our creativity here. Somebody made a very good observation. An ark can be a haven in time. And it can be something that you can look at it like in the dimensions of a lifetime. You could say that a person has an experience such as studying in a yeshiva. That could be an ark. A person could go to Israel, have a wonderful trip there and spend some time there and really have an experience, eye-opening, spiritually uplifting, that they never had before, which could really change a person for life. A person could find himself in a community, in a shul, in a learning environment. It's something where when you go in there, you feel that you are safe from the outside. A person could experience an ark on an annual basis. Maybe the holidays could be an ark in time. Or how about on a weekly basis? A person could experience Shabbos. It's certainly a place which is protected from the rest of the week. You don't go to work. You don't have the pressures. You don't have the influences of the secular society around you. And therefore, we have arks all around us. You can have an ark on a daily basis. You could go to shul on a daily basis. And when you're there for that 45 minutes, you're at the prayer service, you are enveloped by an ark. People are praying, people are wrapped in talis and tefillin. A Torah class could be your ark on a daily basis. There's a lot of arks. And Hashem is telling Noah that there's a way to escape the corruption of the outside world, and that is go into an ark. Think about it. The time is going to come when I'm going to tap you on the shoulder and say, Noah, it's time to make a commitment. It's time to go on the ark. If you wait any longer, it's going to be too late. And that was the second conversation. And when he's on the ark, it's like Gan Eden, it's like the Garden of Eden, it's a pleasure. And once a person gets there, realizes it's the best thing. The hardest part of this process is the third conversation. That's when Hashem has to use the forceful language. Get off the ark. That's the hard part. The hard part is realizing that even though we are welcome to experience the arks, we're welcome to go into the yeshiva or to have that special trip or have that special experience or to go to the class or to go to the holidays or to go to Shabbos, there comes a point when it's over, at least for now. After Shabbos comes Motzei Shabbos. We have to make Havdalah. We have to go back to work. The young man or lady who's just enjoying their yeshiva or their seminary experience realize that at some point they have to go back to the community. They have to live, quote, a normal life. And what happened? Where are the rabbis? Where are the constant learning? Where is the spirited davening that goes on every day? How come it's not around where I live? How come my community back home is not as inspirational as my trip to Israel? And that's when God says to us, you've got to leave the ark. Why? Because someone's got to take responsibility for our whole world. And I can't rely on the corrupt people out there. I've got to rely on you, the righteous ones. So I need you to go and populate the earth and develop the earth and to work the ground. And that's part of the process too. And it's a little daunting. And that's why we need to be pushed a little harder. But then Hashem comes to us in conversation number 4 and he says, but I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you material blessings and spiritual blessings. And don't worry, you will be fruitful, you will multiply, you will succeed. If you've had that ark experience and you're going out because I have commanded you to take responsibility of the world, you will succeed. I will bless you. And in case you're afraid and you're gripped with this fear, how can I do it? How can we succeed? I'm afraid that I'm just going to be corrupt like the rest of the world eventually. Hashem guarantees us. No, no, that's not going to happen. I guarantee you, you have my covenant. So I believe that these 5 conversations are really the conversations that we experience in our lives. We have to make certain decisions that we wish to be righteous, otherwise we're not going to have the conversation. But if we come to a certain point in our lives when we wish to be like Noah, Hashem will take us on a very, very adventuresome, but very, very exciting and very enriching journey. But this journey has these different steps. And what's most important is we've got to know when to get on the ark and how to absorb it, and we have to know how to get off the ark. And there is a final chapter to this story as well, because when Noah gets off the ark, first thing he does is he brings the korban, the offerings, and Hashem smells it and he sees that Noah is filled with the Spirit. But then the Torah tells us on page 42, Vayu v'nei Noach hayotzi min ha-teva shem v'chom v'yofes v'chom hu avi chnan. Noach, the man of the earth, debased himself and planted a vineyard. When he got off the ark and he said, okay, it's my responsibility to rebuild, the first thing that he did was he planted a vineyard. And a vineyard grows grapes, and grapes makes wine. And wine can be misused and abused. He drank of the wine and became drunk, and he uncovered himself within his tent. His drinking created a compromised situation, and that incited the reaction of one of his sons, Ham. Any nice Jewish boy whose name is Ham, he can't be the world's angel. But Ham saw it, and he different interpretations. He ridiculed his father's nakedness. Some say that he actually violated his father. He castrated him, or he sodomized him. There's different interpretations. But Ham became very evil because of what Noah had done. And Rashi says that a very unusual word here is used, Vayochel Noach. Noach became kulin. He became debased or unholy, because he planted the vineyard. What was wrong with planting the vineyard? Didn't Noah have to rebuild the world? Says Rashi, Hayalo lasok tchila benetia acheres. Perhaps he should have planted something else first. Maybe not grapes. Maybe not something that can so easily be abused. Maybe something like wheat, bread, rather than wine. Prioritize it. Something which is a little bit more solid, a little bit less risky. And that should have been his first act, creating some grounding upon which he can then continue. Because the physical world, as we know from last week, the physical world is a great temptation and a great test. And one has to be very, very careful, especially at the outset. Unfortunately, because of this incident with Noah and with Ham, even though he had 2 other sons, but Noah's descendants did not merit to be the saviors of the world. Yes, they saved the world from physical destruction, but they did not create the nation that would eventually save the world in the fullest sense. That was only one corner of Noah's descendants, and that is the person Avraham, which we will meet next week. So somehow, because when he left the ark, he didn't have the absolute highest priority, it made a difference. And Noah did not succeed to the highest degree. What this therefore tells us, that as we listen to Hashem's instructions, and we go into our arks, and we come out of our arks, and we re-enter society, we have to be very careful how we set our priorities, and especially how we put our first foot forward. If our ark is Shabbos, what should be our first activity after Shabbos is over? Should we take off our suit, throw on our week clothes, and run out to the movies? Or should we make Abdallah, have a Malava Malka, which is a special meal, which doesn't have to be a lot, but it's something which brings Shabbos into the week. If we have children, have a wonderful, nice program which is starting a week from Motzei Shabbos, Father and Son Learning. I'm telling you, come with your grandchildren if you have them in town. It makes the whole week a different week. You come home from shul, you make Havdalah, still in your Shabbos clothes, come back for 1 hour and sit down, and the whole room is filled with people learning. It's the most beautiful thing. You might say, but Shabbos is over. But the week is just beginning. If we start the week off, if we plant the right kind of planting, it'll make the whole week different. Same thing, if we start off our day with davening, and that's our ark, before we take off the tefillin and run into the car, spend a few minutes listening to a Dvar Torah or sitting down and reading one, just the way we get started off of the ark makes such a big difference. It made such a big difference with Noah. If a man is coming out of yeshiva, we don't say to him, okay, son, you're out of yeshiva. Start working and learning is over. Chas v'shalom. Now that you're out of yeshiva, you have to continue to learn as you work, as you go to college or whatever it may be. You've got to continue to make sure that you take the ark with you. Otherwise, if you get involved with the wrong kind of planting first, it can take you in the wrong direction. So that is all of the instructions that come forth from these conversations. May we, first of all, merit to hear the conversations from God. May we choose a path of righteousness. May we listen to the conversations with God, find our ark, and know how to get on, and know how to get off, and what to start with. And then we will have the perfect formula, and then, God willing, we will merit to be the true descendants of Avraham. And we'll see where that takes us starting next week. Shakoach. Please, questions, comments? You have a question, yes?
You use the word covenant.
Covenant, yes.
But covenant is between parties. You know what you say, so here you say what Hashem is willing to do, but what is the requirement on the other side to make the covenant valid?
A person suggested that Noah had already fulfilled his side of the covenant by existing and by being righteous in a corrupt generation and going through the test of the flood and everything. Hashem says, you have locked in for the rest of time that the world will not be destroyed on the merit of your existence. That's what he suggested. That as a result of that, Hashem says, now for that, you have earned my covenant. What do you think?
It's contrary to the historic use of covenant in Chumash. Chumash is always, I will do this, but you've got to do that, and if
right.
you do the other, all hell breaks loose.
Right.
But that doesn't exist here.
Right. But that could be. It could be that you have already earned it. So now we're waiting just for Hashem's side of things. It's an idea. I never thought of that before, but otherwise you have a good, you know, it is a definite question. Steve.
What I read, I understood that Noah wasn't that willing to get into the ark, and he went the last minute after being told he had to get in or else it'd be too late. And it wasn't exactly any Garden of Eden inside either, that he had to work 24 hours a day trying to feed all those animals,
like a zoo.
Which were in a space that was a big space, but not anywhere close to the size it had to be, that it was big enough through a miracle of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
And only because of that, because it would have took an enormous space,
mm-hmm.
bigger than any ship we've got today.
Right.
And in fact, at one point he was he didn't do something right, but anyway, a lion bit
him. He was late feeding the lion.
So
right.
He got bit in the leg. So then when he finally got to where he was going, got off and he grew his vineyard, that was one thing, and then he gets castrated, and of course he curses Canaan because God blessed Ham so he couldn't curse him.
Uh-huh. I see. Anyway, the point is well taken. He didn't have a relaxing time in the ark. Nobody said that it was physically relaxing, but spiritually, he was doing chesed all day, doing kindness, and he didn't have to worry about people killing, stealing, acting immoral. He didn't have to worry about that. Spiritually, it was like the Garden of Eden. In fact, a Jew doesn't mind working hard to do mitzvahs. Halavai, that we should have so many mitzvahs to do all the time. We're not here to relax. We're here to do the right kinds of deeds. And in that sense, it was without the challenges of the evil influence.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.